gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens. What kind of radio show is this?
Yeah, Circleville Letters. It's an interesting case. I don't know if you could really ever prove it, necessarily, but I guess that's why it keeps kind of lingering around, this kind of story, that they'll always keep, you see this with all these sort of mysteries, they always keep trying. They claim to have some definitive new way of doing something, and then they claim it's solved, but you never can really, they never actually, nothing's ever really solved, it seems.
No. I was waiting for Aaron to jump in there, but no.
Oh, sorry.
It's not.
Sometimes I just stop talking and don't even throw a question out. So it's perfectly fine. Oh, man. So, okay, let's talk about the field trips, because now you guys, I was going to mention this, circle back to this, the Bigfoot Conference. Is this kind of when... is this when the impetus of the show came about?
Sam, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but we've been talking about it at that point. I think we were sort of throwing around ideas about what we could do, and then we did the Saucer Life episode where we went to the Bigfoot Conference, which was, we were already talking about Great Lakes lore sort of conceptually at that point. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, I don't remember that. I remember thinking, like, oh, this is cool, and, like, when we did our, like, the conversation or whatever while we were there, I was like, this seems to, like, work well, you know, or whatever.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
Maybe, yeah. I think it, in retrospect, it probably was the start.
Yeah, actually, now that I think about it, yeah, everybody's right with me, yeah.
It was the all-in. It was the all-in of
It was like the all-in pay-per-view for AEW, so some pro wrestling out there. So,
right. It was the proof of concept, but yeah, tell me. Well, first, I'll get to you in a moment, Aaron. I'm interested in Sam, because Aaron, you and I, we not only are we well-worn on the conference circuit, but you and I have been in conferences at the same, at the same conferences. So we have, we know the conferences. I'm very interested in what Sam thought, as a, I presume a first timer at one of these, and it was exotic for Aaron, I suppose, too, because it was Bigfoot and not really the UFO stuff we're usually mixed up in. But Sam, what did you think of your foray into the world of you know, paranormal conferencing?
Very different from the world of history and museum conferencing. much more chill, if you will. But yeah, I mean, it was fun. There were impressive things about it. There were less than impressive things about it.
She's trying to be very nice to get you guys go back this summer.
Very nice. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed sort of being like surrounded by, like, the topic or whatever, instead of being, like, the weird kid in the room who's like, oh, hey, tell me that Bigfoot story again, right? Like, hey, guys, you know, I told my work people, I was like, oh, I'm going to a Bigfoot conference this weekend. They're like, you're going to what? and so that was it was fun. I would do it again.
Now, here's a, you've both been to, like Sam was saying, more academic conferences. I'm going to assume that the merch is way better at these paranormal events than these academic conferences, because that's what I kind of like. Is it's not just lectures and stuff. You're surrounded by little Bigfoot dolls, or you could buy a cast of a Bigfoot print or something. It's like, you know, I don't think you see that at a history conference necessarily.
No, no, they're showing off their, like, you know, acid-free boxes at museum conferences. Like, wow, this is thrilling cardboard. But, you know, Aaron, I think, hyped the merch, and then I was very, I was disappointed with the quality of the merch at the Bigfoot conference.
Oh, no.
It was, there were not many vendors there. And it was the first year for it, so that,
oh, okay. might be why. Yeah.
But I think what Sam is downplaying is how big her smile was when she took a picture with Cliff from Bigfoot Hunter.
Wow, that's true.
At his table. She was that was worth the whole trip for. And we bought stickers from Cliff. So that was cool. My favorite merch stand was the people selling Bigfoot field casting kits, and I like walked by and we walked by and it was very clear that they were just basically selling you a box of plaster of Paris with like a 400% markup. which, God bless them. That's, you know, good for them. If they can get away with that, that's outstanding.
Marketing,
and I'm just jealous I didn't think of it first, right? But the best thing about this was there was a cardboard cutout of a person dressed in like a camouflage bodysuit or something, you know, showing off a big footprint. And we walked by, and I made some sort of deeply inappropriate comment about the cardboard stand-up.
Nothing left to the imagination. In this cardboard cutout.
I said that in a much less appropriate way. But you know, then subsequently we look back and realize that when I made my comment, the person depicted in the cardboard cutout was the one sitting there selling the plaster of Paris mold. So I didn't really feel like I should walk down that entire side of the merch hall for the rest of the day. I was a bit sheepish after that. But
well, and it also didn't appear to be a family too. That was like a family, and like so there were kids there, and like I couldn't imagine.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine your mom being the one with like the terrible camel toe and the cardboard cutout? Like,
yeah, that's exactly. Actually, that's what I said. Yeah, could you imagine being a kid sitting there as some guy walks by commenting about their mom's camel toe and the cardboard cutout? drive home that humiliation. But that was weird. Who was your favorite speaker at the thing, Sam?
Was it Andrew Davis?
Oh, Davis, yeah.
No, I forget his name. Yeah. Yeah,
yep,
he was very funny, very entertaining, like clearly a seasoned presenter with you know, all of the charisma that goes, and he had an accent,
right,
which is always helpful. But, yeah, he was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he was mine too, Andrew Davis. Yeah, didn't you have him on your show at some point, Tim? I think.
Andrew Davis. It's not Adam Davies, it's Andrew Davis.
I can't remember him.
I haven't had an Andrew Davis on. I've had an Adam Davies, and he does have an accent, so it may have been him.
That's probably him.
Yes. That's why I said Davies first. Yes. But I think it was.
I'm being persnickety about pronunciation. I'll look it up later, though, the event. That's the guy, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, he was... Whoever he was, he was my favorite too. Cliff was good. Cliff from Bigfoot Hunters was good, but he's no Bobo. But he was pretty good. Yeah.
I do like how they get very hyper specific on some of the. I'm thinking more of the Flat Earth conference, but they're all like this, where it's like, okay, you're going to a conference for this strange thing. But then you get into the nitty gritty of it, and you're like, there's going to be an hour and a half presentation on red haired Bigfoot versus brown haired Bigfoot, so that'll be interesting later today. And it's like, what the fuck? These people really they really dig into this. That was always kind of my takeaway. You almost want to laugh at it at first, but then you're like, this guy put a lot of work into this red hair versus brown hair Bigfoot thing. I need to straighten out and fly right on this.
This is his life. You know, this is all he's got. It was a lot of that was very specific. The way the scheduling was, I don't know if Sam, if you felt this way, but it just felt like, you know, there were these sort of two tracks of speakers sort of going on at the same time. So you had this big list of speakers, but you could really only see half of them because sort of going at the same time, which is kind of frustrating and led to some hard choices. And in one case, we made the utterly wrong choice. But
yes, we did.
Yes, we did.
Never go to the woo room.
Never go to the – yes, they had one room. They designated the woo room for like,
sort of the
weirder.
And
I was sort of thinking, oh, well, this is where you get your interdimensional Bigfoot and stuff like that.
Right, yeah.
No, I think this is just where they put the people who weren't very good. So, we saw two presentations in the woo room. One of them was okay, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one, yeah.
One of them were not. We saw the She Squatters, who were fine. I don't hate it, but I know they're
okay.
More.
Like, a lot of the presentations were that. Like, it was okay. It was fine.
Yeah, it was just like, there's some people telling us about their Sasquatch hunting experiences. That was great. Then the other one in the woo room was not ideal. We talk about it on the Saucer Life episode where we went to this thing and it was not great. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like the idea of the woo room. When you first said that, I had the same thought as you. I was like, that's a very self-aware move on the part of the conference promoters. It was like, oh, that would if I did an event, I would do a woo room now with like we'd put the people with the really wild shit. But apparently they were just like, no, you're in the woo room. You're down there, Bill.
Yep.
So now you've been to a bunch of other places. So I like this. What I like about the show in a lot of ways is this is going to sound cheesy. I apologize, but it's more. This is really coming from me. I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. It's more than a podcast. It's an experience because you guys do. I know, for real. That really is. I'm not even.
That's the new tagline. We're going to put that on the website, Sam. More than a podcast,
Great
it's
Lakes
an experience.
Lore. More than yes.
That's my review of Great Lakes Lore. you guys are not just doing the podcast. You're going on these field trips. You're videoing some of the stuff. And you're doing the listener. You do a lot of interactive listener feedback and you know, back and forth with listeners, reading emails and stuff like that. So we'll talk a little bit more here about the I want to know about, well, you've gone to a few different places with ghosts. What's the best of the ghostly places you think you've been to? Sam? Is it Byron Cemetery or is it the island?
I think. Oh, we did not go to Mackinac Island.
Oh, I thought you went to the island, see?
No,
I'm mistaken.
Yeah, that's okay. I was like, do we have another ghost thing? I don't know. The 6 months.
No, then I'm wrong. So, okay, so you went to the you went to the haunted island.
We went to the Byron Cemetery.
Cemetery. Yes.
Yep. And Aaron, I left the picking of the field trip location up to him, and we don't really drive far, so we're looking for places within like a couple of hours of where we are to just kind of do a fun outing. And so we went to the cemetery that had the ghost story attached to it. And, yeah, just kind of looked around. I mean, it's not like it was a ghost hunt, although I feel like maybe this fall I'm going to force Aaron to go someplace where we actually, like, ghost hunt something. but yeah, I mean, we're just kind of exploring, like, you know, it was very generic, like, there's old lady the ghost of old lady Byron
in
the cemetery.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, who the heck is she? Like, you know, and yeah, so we checked out the cemetery and found some other interesting things about it. Because I think one of the things that we always like to point out is that, like, the real history is often more interesting, in our opinions, than, like, some weird trumped up ghost story, you know, or something like that.
Right, right.
So there are a few different fun memorials, you know, that we pointed out. Wasn't it a woman who served as a nurse in the Spanish-American War, Aaron? Is that what it was that was there?
Yeah.
Yeah,
really.
So, I mean, some cool history.
Yeah.
Yeah, so some cool history connections there. And I mean, also just kind of highlighting the fun that you can have with friends while doing cheesy paranormal stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, when you were in the cemetery, Aaron, did you feel a presence of a ghost or anything?
There was somebody walking like four huge dogs. That was pretty wild.
Really?
Yeah. One of those dogs, I'm pretty sure I could have ridden it like a horse. I mean, it was, I'm not a small guy. This is a big dog. So I did not feel a presence. But I will say that every ghost hunt I've been on, ghosts never show up, and the people running the ghost hunt are like, we always get something here. So I'm like a ghost repellent. I think so. So yeah, you might not want to take me on any actual ghost hunts if you want anything to show up. The Byron Cemetery was fun, and it's one of those things where Byron is you know, maybe 4.5 people live there. It's a really really small town, and it's one of those things where You're having fun, and I think cemeteries are wonderful to walk around in, but you're also, at least I am in the back of my head, thinking the one sort of Barney Fife cop in this town is going to start asking questions, you know, about these people who clearly don't live here, you know, walking around filming things in the cemetery. So,
filming in the cemetery, yeah.
It's like,
you got a permit for that?
Yeah.
There you go. Yep.
Guerrilla,
Aaron and I.
Guerrilla filmmaking. Yeah.
Same thoughts. Yeah.
We did another field trip in the end of January for the Patreon, where we went to various bookstores in Mid Michigan,
right,
checking out the state of paranormal books, and that was fun because I got to buy a bunch of books. But you know, the only downside was, I really should have let Sam pick where we had lunch because it was not great. But
I said, really, you want to go there?
And I'm like, oh no, I'm kind of hungry. So
was it a mom and pop place or was it a chain?
It was like a dive bar.
It was a bar.
Like,
yeah.
It was a bar, and it was not good. And there was, like, one person working. She took our order and then went and made our food. Brought our food back. And like, it's like, I'm pretty sure this was cooked on a hot plate behind the bar. So, yeah.
You were about to channel John Taffer, weren't you? You were going to be like, give me everything on the menu. I'm putting you through the paces.
Right. This is we're going to do a stress test here. The Chizo budget does not run to ordering one of everything at a place. But that was fun because I think one thing that sort of jumps out at me is just how few paranormal books are on the shelves these days. I don't know. It just seems like there's fewer compared to the old days. The old days, listen to me.
It's weird. I haven't really looked at bookstores, you know, in bookstores too often nowadays. That's part of the problem, I guess, in a way. You can get all the books. You know, you hear about you hear it on the internet, you buy it on the internet. You know, it's all one fluid motion. It's not like back in the day where you hear somebody on the radio and you'd have to go to the bookstore, and get them to order it or whatever, or look and see if they have
it. Yeah.
Sam, you're going to say something?
All I was going to say is that if you are, because the field trips are available for our Patreon subscribers, and if you watch it, Aaron continually cut my face out of the shot, so I learned that I need to be more in charge of filming. At one point, he's filming the bookcase, and, like, you hear my voice, like, down and off to the side, but it's just the bookshelf, so I gave him a hard time about that one.
Well, you can't hold the camera because your arms are shorter.
I know.
I got a special piece of equipment that will hopefully remedy the situation for the next time around. I got one of those gimbal things that lets me, you know, actually track people's faces. So with a camera, not like, you know, like chasing them down like a hunter. But
I'm tracking your face. I don't know what this is. Yeah. Not like a selfie stick.
It is kind of like a selfie stick, but it's motorized. Pretty fancy, actually. It's pretty fancy, and I got one used.
It makes,
so,
like, fluid motion that way. Like, we have one.
Yeah. It's like a stabilizer. It's like a stabilizer. So, yeah. It's
I haven't watched.
Yes,
did you film in the bookstore?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, because all I ever saw was you guys in the car. So I missed the bookstore part. And I skipped around, too.
If you skip around, the odds are you're gonna get us in the car. And that's the problem with doing things like this in Michigan in the winter. Because you're constantly just, like, trying to find somewhere warm. it's like we couldn't stand on the sidewalk and talk about things because it was cold that day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It felt like. So, of course, I wasn't wearing a coat. That's probably why it was cold.
Well, I like your idea, Sam, of going on a ghost hunt because, Aaron, now you and I were on a ghost hunt together, right?
Yes.
We did the theater in Halifax, or wherever it was.
Yep. Nothing showed up.
I had the same experience, yeah. It's a very – now, Sam, have you ever done a ghost hunt?
I have, in that the previous museum that I worked at, we ran some ghost hunts. So we had, like, a professional team come in and you know, they did their ghost hunty things.
Okay. So, all right. So I thought you were leading the ghost hunt. I was like,
there as the staff member, but also participated. So I don't know. Weird things happen. We played with some dowsing rods. I even held the dowsing rods. I can't explain how they moved.
Yeah, it's an interesting experience. Yeah. I found it very – I was thinking about it today because I was thinking about mentioning that Aaron and I did the ghost hunt. Yeah, it's very – I felt very out of place doing it. Like when someone comes into some place and tries to, like, teach you improv or something, or something. It's like, first we have to do all these voice exercises or something, you know. And I always feel like, like, this is awkward. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's the sort of, like, feeling I get when I think of ghost hunting, where it's like, all right, now I have to walk around with this thing, and what? I kind of just what? I talk to the ghost.
I feel the same way. The only other ghost hunt I've did besides in Halifax was, or in Nova Scotia, was I have some good friends of mine in Indiana who run a paranormal ghost investigation. I was going to say society. I think it's like just an organization. It's not a society. That sounds very weird. But I tag. It's always like I tag along on a ghost hunt, right? I'm not like I might help carry stuff. That's like the extent of my expertise is I can haul things. But it's just very very strange, and it was interesting. I liked seeing the process. I was a little uncomfortable at the whole sequence where you're in the room alone and you're sort of asking questions to the air, sort of asking the ghost if they want to show themselves, because it's weird. It's sort of like half of me feels like this is extremely silly, and the other half is like, golly, I really hope nothing actually shows up and does anything weird, because that would be very freaky.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like, oh, this is – it's like on the one hand, it's like sort of, you know, the sort of cynical, okay, let's ask the empty room if there's a ghost. And also it's like, I really hope nothing answers, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
Sort of thing. And not wanting to and having questions, but not wanting to ask questions that make it sound like I'm, you know, being extremely sort of debunkery about the whole thing. But yeah, it's a weird sort of feeling. It's like, okay, they've clearly got a ritual maybe would be a good word. But you know, there's a set sort of pattern to how these things work, and it always just feels like I'm sort of a spectator rather than a participant. It does feel kind of strange. Yeah. But I didn't get to play.
Yeah,
that's
the way I feel.
Maybe that's the key. Yeah.
See, now I'm all in, like, the ghosts are my jam. So, like, that is, I'm all in for that kind of stuff. I mean, ghosts were sort of my paranormal gateway drug, if you will. So, yeah, I mean, I've always loved reading ghost stories. I've been to different, like, ghost hunter presentations. I've, you know, done the ghost hunts at the museum, and I don't know. I like it. I think we kind of talked about it on our Mackinac Island episode a little bit when we had my one public history friend Claire on, and I sort of agreed with her, like, the ghost thing is kind of like, you know, touches on, like, different spiritual questions about the world, the universe, whatever, and I'm really drawn to that. So I dig the ghost hunt.
I'm not necessarily averse to them. I'm just like Aaron.
Yeah.
I'm in the same exact mindset where it's like, yeah, I feel like I even tried when we were in Canada to like immerse myself in the experience, and it just doesn't. I don't know. Yeah, it's like being hypnotized or something. I kept being like, all right, I know. I know I'm supposed to possibly see a ghost in a minute, so. It's like I can never kind of get that out of my head that there's supposed to be a ghost at any moment. I should be aware, looking for the ghost.
Are the hairs standing up on the back of my neck right now? I don't know. should
yeah.
Maybe,
yeah.
I'm not sure.
did
yeah, yeah. I end up
drop?
Like, end up,
yeah.
Yes, exactly, Aaron. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, and I was sitting there for like 45 minutes being like, is this a cold spot or am I imagining, like, what constitutes cold, really? You know?
Yeah.
mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the ghost you've had your hand on my
spot?
Crotch for 45 minutes, sir.
the whole cold spot thing, it's like, do you feel the cold spot? It's like, yes, I kind of do, but it is now 2 in the morning, and it's generally colder at 2 in the morning, you know? And I'm tired, and you get colder when you get tired sometimes. So, yeah, I just sort of – I don't want to go into a mental place where I sound like a cynical asshole, you know, to my ghost-hunting people. So – it's interesting to see. I was actually more interested in how all their cameras worked. That was the most fascinating thing for me was show me the gadgets. What kind of adapter you use for this? You know, so yeah, this on batteries. You got an AC plug for this? Yeah, that's sort of where my mind goes with it.
I'm going to completely pivot it away and throw back to something I was thinking about with the dog man earlier. I brought this up to Zilia when we were talking about it. I have certain thoughts, I guess, that just dominate my mind at certain points about different topics. But since we were talking about the dog man, did you explore at all in the show how it's not even possible really for a dog to be walking around like that just because of the way their legs are built?
we didn't talk about that, but that is a good point that I have read before. Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
that's one of the weirdest aspects.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah,
like just anatomically, it doesn't work. You know, it's because it's not like a werewolf. It's not like a dog hyphen
right.
man. You know, it's not like a chimera sort of creature. It's just mm-hmm. would be like a dog walking upright, and it's like that's not going to happen. It just wouldn't. I mean, and I know, but some things, you know, science doesn't have all the answers. No, but legs are the leg doesn't bend that way, man. Come on.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the wildest part about the thing.
I'm much more sympathetic to Bigfoot or werewolves or something like that than I am. It's like it was a dog but walking upright, you know, and you could see where its leg bent. It's like, and some of them say that. It's like they could see the leg, and so they knew it was a dog and not like a person. It's like, no, you didn't see that.
Yeah. That's one of those, yeah, it's one of those things that always kind of sticks with me because I can't think of an analogous sort of thing where it would be like, no, UFOs, they couldn't exist because they're too heavy. Like, that's, you know, a saucer made of lead would fall from the sky, like, as soon as it came close to Earth or whatever, so this couldn't work. It's like, no, that's kind of how I see almost the dogman thing.
Yeah.
Now, Sam, as a dogman aficionado, what do you make of that, aspect of the mysterious creature?
No, yeah, I think I have always had questions about that. I mean, I have a dog who is fairly wolf-type shaped, and when he jumps up, he puts his front paws on my shoulders, and he's not walking anywhere. he is stationary. So, yeah.
Zach Copley in the chat says, oh, come on, I've had dogs who have walked upright for a few steps at least. For a few steps, yeah, but
yeah,
not like...
If I pull my dog back with me, his feet are going to move with him, but...
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no, now he sent me a video, which I'm not going to open on the... It's probably a dog walk... It's probably like one dog walking on 2 feet. It's like, okay, dude, we're talking about like a whole bunch of dogs. Well, what's interesting too is you point out in that episode that they just seem to be dog men for the most part. It's not like dog kids or a group of dogs or a dog
yeah.
man and a dog lady or even a dog lady. It's just dog men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't recall any dog women. I mean, I know like with Bigfoot, you'll have, you know, various, you know, gender diversity in the Bigfoot community.
Patty's a lady.
right, yeah. So, yeah, but I don't recall seeing any of that with Dogman. So I don't know how they reproduce. I don't want to know how they reproduce. I know there's books on Amazon about this, but, you know, that's something that we'll never be on the show, but some podcast should do an episode about the explosion of self-published cryptid erotica on Amazon, because that is just, I would listen to that podcast all day if they critiqued cryptid erotica that they got from the Amazon store, but we're not going to do it, but I think somebody should.
I feel like that's going to end up being one of those Saucer Life episodes you do way down when you're really stretching for topics.
When I'm really stretching for topics and I'm still not going to do Roswell, you know, I will, you know, do okay. So we got some My Sexy Abduction erotica tonight, and We did Krampus on the holiday special. My wife read the description of one, and Sam, you read the description of one, did you? For Krampus? Okay.
Yeah.
No. The foster wife read the description of, it was like a sexy alien Santa Claus book. That's the one she did, I think. I actually got
Sorry,
to talk to wife that Krampus erotica book for Christmas that year. It was not a hit. No.
Now, when I was I was listening to a whole bunch of the episodes, and I like to listen to the first episode to see kind of how the evolution goes, and you were sort of talking about what you guys wanted to talk about on the show, and this may have just been some, like, throwaway line that you're like, oh, shit, we said that? So I apologize if that's the case, that I plucked it out of, like, the 6 months ago ether or whatever. But you were sort of, like, talking about, you know, talk about legends and lore and stuff like that on the show, and you said disasters and the disastrous, and that kind of, like, piqued my interest because I don't recall that you've sort of gone into disasters and disastrous sort of events. So did you do the Edmund Fitzgerald, was that Great Lakes lore? On the, now I'm trying to think, but yeah.
We
have
did
you
it
done
like
disasters
a little,
and disastrous?
Yeah, so we did that little, it was like a little mini thing that we did about the Edmund Fitzgerald. We didn't go into like, it wasn't like a detailed, like, account of anything or exploring any, like, I don't know, hauntings or anything surrounding.
Yeah, okay,
you know,
yeah.
The kinda,
yeah, it was just a...
but we did a mention that we released on Edmund Fitzgerald Day, if you will. But there was something that was on the shortlist. It was a train wreck, and that was in, was it New York, Aaron? I can't remember.
York,
and then we
yeah,
ditched that idea. Yeah. But it could come back.
We've had some other, I don't know if it's quite disastrous, but we've got some ghost towns of the Great Lakes region that we're going to be talking about in the future. So
ghost towns.
So slow disasters, mm-hmm. I guess. Economic displacement and industry shutting down, which is disastrous, I guess, in the long term. If you're a coal mine, this is the Great Lake, not coal, iron. I don't know what they mine. Ghost towns. There's going to be
ghost
some shipwrecks, town. I think. We've got not the next episode, but the episode after is going to be about the Great Lakes Triangle. So there's going to be some plane crashes or plane disappearances and shipwrecks. With that, and I think it's the first topic we've covered that there was an old In Search Of episode about back in the 70s. So I'm excited about that because that was I'm old enough to remember. Well, I'm not, but I remember reruns of In Search Of. So that was my paranormal gateway drug, was In Search Of. Whenever there wasn't a baseball game, In Search Of would be on.
So there's like a Bermuda Triangle of the Great Lakes, essentially.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, basically, yeah.
Wow.
And
that's interesting.
Yeah, and there was actually a book written about it back in the 70s that I'm trying to track down. It's hard to find. Because it was one of these books that was like it just came out in paperback in like 1977, and you know all the copies are like $75. Some water damage, you know, in the description. So I might not be able to get a hold of this book, but I'm trying.
That would be an interesting book. We were kind of railing on the Michigan Mothman. So I mean, the Michigan Mothman. To be fair, yeah, the preponderance of triangles in the paranormal is worthy of its own sort of exploration.
I was thinking today, you know, why is there not a, you know, Lake Michigan or a Great Lakes dodecahedron or a Great Lakes polygon or just a Great Lakes rectangle? I mean, you can take all these disasters and kind of just draw any shape you want, but triangle seems to be the thing.
That's creepier.
It is creepier.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like Lake Michigan Mothman. It's kind of biting on the Bermuda Triangle. It's like, all right, well, clearly that worked, so we'll make this a triangle also, so people get what we're talking about. When it's not really the same thing at all. Well, I guess the Great Lakes Triangle would be akin to the Bermuda Triangle. But I think when you have large, going to sound cynical, but I think when you just have large places like that, shit happens. But, you know, I don't know. I'd have to really dig into it.
Can you believe that planes disappeared over a whole state? Wow.
Right,
four,
right.
Over like four states and a number of lakes. Yeah.
Right.
So what do you guys have planned coming up? The weather's getting better. I suppose the field trips would be first thing in mind. Like, do you have any excursions planned that you're going to head out to visit, check things out anytime soon? Aaron?
Yeah, go.
You can say no, nothing on the books yet.
Well, we talked a little bit about
or places you'd like
places.
To go. Let's go with
okay,
that.
Places
you'd like to go.
Okay, there's a couple of ghost towns that are within our radius of comfort. At least they were before the gas prices went up. We'll have to read about.
Right, yeah,
we'll have to talk to accounting and see what they say. But yeah, there's a I forget the name of it, but
Pierre Cheney,
a ghost town in sort of northern mid Michigan. Would that be the best way to say it? It's a ghost town where a lot of people died of, was it dysentery or something like that?
Yeah, a couple of outbreaks. Yeah,
a couple of outbreaks of dysentery, and I think there were rumors of an old Indian curse. So,
yes.
oh, wow.
But when aren't there, right? So that would be kind of cool to look at. There are some roads that are vaguely haunted and associated with sort of poorly historically sourced witchcraft in eastern Michigan, sort of not too far from Detroit, that are kind of interesting. Some things like that. Those are just the things that are sort of in my mind. Sam, did you have anything on that front?
Well, we've talked about heading over to White Cloud to do some follow-up research on the Dudgeon Swamp mystery. There were some newspapers, the actual real local newspapers from White Cloud hadn't been digitized. We were doing our research, but they're held over there so we could go over on a Saturday and spend some fun time looking at microfilm.
Which would be fun.
Now, this is the
Dramamine.
Now, this is – now, Sam, this is the case that's in your hometown, right?
Yes.
The Dudgeon.
Yes, it is.
Can you give – I'll make you do this. can you – give us a thumbnail, quick thumbnail of that story for people who can check it out on GreatLakesLore.com.
Sure. Basically, a family moves into White Cloud, Michigan in like 19-teens, and nobody likes them, and they seem to be sort of rough and rowdy. And then people start dying. A couple people associated with them die. And there are some really shady investigations into whether or not this family murdered those people, handled really poorly by state police officers, state troopers. And over time, this all boiled down to little Sam being told that there's a haunted swamp filled with ghosts from the murderous Dudgeon family, and that, you know, there were incest babies and, like, all kinds of crazy things.
Yeah.
If you drive there, you know, you'll see lights and hear babies crying and whatever. So this is a story I grew up with, and then we researched it, and I found out very new things that I had never known about, and it really cast a new light onto my understanding of what had happened, so...
Yeah, it's an interesting story. I enjoyed the episode quite a bit. There's a lot of you guys really get into the detail of the story. There's a lot of colorful aspects to the story, like how there's a mob that like beats a confession out of these people, and then the authorities are like, we're going to prosecute the mob, and also we're going to take that confession. And it's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
How's that? How is that allowed?
Mm-hmm.
These poor people.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
it's
dressing
interesting
up as a ghost to try and oh, sorry,
yes,
for, yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. The the yes, I have it in my notes. The rural finger of suspicion. The rural finger of suspicion. Got to avoid that, my friends. Well, it's an interesting aspect too of what you guys do, because especially with this episode, is like that's not necessarily that's not a story that's like apocryphal in a sense. It's like you actually found the information that informed
mm-hmm.
the legend, which is pretty,
mm-hmm.
that's what historians do, I guess, right, Sam?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, this was a good, you know, case of this is what you find out if you actually, like, take the time to look into the sources. But, of course, the sources aren't always available to everybody. I mean, we have a newspapers.com subscription, and not everybody's going to have that. And so, you know, we sort of a fun job to have, I guess, to find the truth or some level of the truth and share that with people, you know, more broadly and improve their understanding.
Now, one thing I did notice on the episodes I have to take issue with, Aaron, is on multiple occasions you expressed a distaste for the Beast of Busco, the large turtle that lives in a lake. So air it out.
Man,
what's your problem with the Beast of Busco?
My problem with the Beast of Busco is that it probably, at best, the most we can possibly say about the Beast of Busco is that it was a turtle. That's
right.
You know, it's just a big turtle. And Cherubusco, Indiana, which is like 10 miles from where I grew up, it's where my dentist was. When I was a kid, my parents went to church there. The town's entire identity is wrapped up in this turtle, and it's on the one hand, it's like actually it's kind of sweet. I don't have a problem with the turtle as such. I don't have a problem with the town making money off of turtle days. I don't even I do kind of mind the giant sign at the beginning of the front of the town saying that it's Turtle Town, USA, as though it's known for its turtles. It's not. It's known for one turtle that probably didn't exist. That bugs me on an accuracy level. But the biggest thing that gets me is that it's referred to, it's always sort of pointed out as being a cryptid. In like books like
right.
Weird Indiana and stuff like that, and nobody ever thought it was a cryptid. Nobody ever thought it was something that wasn't natural.
Mm-hmm.
They just thought it was an abnormally large turtle, you know. And
right.
and so it's just an example of how, you know, the paranormal industry will, you know, nature abhors a vacuum, right? So. Well, there's no cryptid in northeastern Indiana. Well, by golly, find something, right? Because we need to fill
yeah.
this. We need more pages in Weird Indiana because it's the least weird state in the union, right? Apart from like Iowa. So it's weird. And what's funny is like
it's ridiculous.
Up, I have
it's
no
like
idea.
Ridiculous. The word that comes to mind is it's just kind of ridiculous. Like it's but in a good way. It's like delightfully ridiculous, maybe.
Yeah,
might be.
Yeah,
absurd.
I mean, I'm not mad at it. Yeah, it's just I can't believe people think there's something there when there ain't. But you know, good for them, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, Oscar the Beast of Busco.
The Beast of Busco. I did a story last year. The lake, the property with the lake, with the Beast of Busco purportedly in it, was for sale. I don't know if anyone bought it or not, but you could have owned. I guess with that, you could have bought the Beast of Busco essentially.
I could have. I could have, and well, not me. Somebody with more money than me could
right.
have.
Someone
but,
could have.
I could have owned, you know, 40 acres of poorly drained northeast Indiana. That would have. Boy, that would have been ideal. But I remember seeing that story and thinking that, gosh, if I were ever to move back home, that's how I'd do it. Buying the place where the Beast of Busco was. That, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I would, yeah, that's the kind of thing, if I had super shitload of money, like if I had won the lottery, I'd be like, fuck yeah, I'm buying the Beast of Busco. I own the Beast of Busco. That's the lake where he lives. He's mine now.
I would then sue the town out of its turtle days. I would like forbid turtle days. I'd make them. I own the land where the beast was, you know. I'd be like the villain in an 80s movie, you know.
Exactly.
Instead of bulldozing the orphanage, then all the kids would have to like have a dance off to save turtle days or whatever and defeat me.
Exactly. Yep. To win back the lake for the town, that somehow we would inadvertently wager the the lake on some kind of lake, whatever competition could be held on a lake, a jet ski race. And we'd be foiled, yeah. And the town would get the Beast of Busco back. And so, yeah. We just wrote a movie in, like, the last 3 minutes of this show.
I'd have a gang of thugs who would, like, threaten the kids, and one of them would be, like, Terry Funk, like in Roadhouse. Yeah, it would be perfect.
It would be a really good movie. The Beast of Busco.
This next big project, yeah.
Well, it's... That connects in a sense, and we wrap it up here, I guess, but that connects in a sense to the sort of the very beginning almost of the conversation in a way, because the Beast of Busco exemplifies this idea of what we were talking about, these sort of like hyper-localized, somebody saw something weird, the local paper covered it, people went crazy for 6 weeks, and now they're Turtle Town because of that one thing
right.
That happened so long ago. It's strange. It's crazy. It's a great part of Americana, and part of me, well, I was kind of complaining earlier about you don't see this stuff nowadays. It does make you nostalgic in a sense for that period, because you don't see a lot of places nowadays are more synonymous with bad shit happening there. So it's
right.
A different world altogether.
Go
ahead, Aaron.
No, I just said it is. Yeah.
Oh. All right. Oh man. So you guys are on the Patreon and you're doing pretty well on there.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are doing really well, actually. I know people that have had Patreons for like 3 years or so, 3 or 4 or 5 years. They try to keep it going, and you know they only have like 40 subscribers or something. It's like, oh geez, I don't know. But you guys are crushing it on there. And what I like, as I said, I wasn't just blowing smoke up your ass. It is more than a podcast. It's like an experience. You guys are sort of putting blog posts up and stuff. That's what you got to do with this thing. That's why I don't have one of those, because I'm so lazy. I'm so lazy. I don't want to be obligated to anyone paying for it. But people should subscribe to your Patreon, because you're churning out stuff all the time. And Aaron, this is looped in with the Saucer Life, right? So this is the Cheezo Media Patreon. So people who subscribe to this, they're not just getting Great Lakes Lore; they're getting Saucer Life stuff. And I'm going to be completely honest, folks. I'm not making shit up. Tons of shit they're putting out. Aaron and Sam are loading that thing up with content. So. Definitely check it out. You want to talk a little bit about that, Aaron? What's your experience like as, you know, entering the Patreon fray?
Yeah, it's something I've been thinking about for a while. Actually, I had it set up like 3 years ago, and I was like, ah, gosh, I mean, do I want to be one of those Patreons that has like, you know, my friend who subscribes and that's it, you know, and sort of like... like then obligated to provide content for, you know, a guy and his hamster. But I was just like very, very trepidatious about doing any of that. I had a lot of ideas about stuff I wanted to put up, like as far as content, that I had a hard time justifying putting the time into without some sort of, you know, money. Right. But then Sam was like, well, why don't we do this? And I'm like, okay, I guess if somebody besides me thinks it's a good idea, you know, maybe I should try it. So yeah, it's been fun. I'm really, one of the things that I really like, and Sam can tell us what she really likes about it, but what I really like about it is having that opportunity to sort of create those sort of every week we have a sort of blog style post about research we're doing or methodology or something like that. And I really like doing that. I've been wanting to do something like that for a long time, but just with the podcast, it was just like, I don't know if I want to spend the time to do that. But now it's like, okay, well, I feel an obligation to provide content. So now I've got all these ideas and things I want to talk about. So that's kind of fun. And I enjoy doing that. I enjoy getting the comments and an additional avenue of comments and feedback from a sort of invested group of listeners to both shows. So I like that interaction. I like having that space to sort of provide something for an audience who, kind of like Sam talks about, who has decided to spend their time to be there rather than out of a sense of obligation. So that's what I've enjoyed about it.
Yeah, it's cool. Full disclosure, I am a subscriber, folks. So, yeah, I enjoy it quite a bit. And what I like, too, is I don't post really in the thing, but what you were saying, too, it's like there's a lot of good feedback from the listeners and people who are, you know, they're literally invested in the thing. So they care a lot about the show, and you get really good feedback from people, you know, from those folks. You got one guy in there, though. I'm going to rip on him, rib him. Here or rip on him, I guess, but mostly in a lovingly way. Kirk Walker, I don't know who this character is, but he stopped doing it now. But every time I would do a show, if I didn't have it up on the podcast feed within like a day, he'd be like, "When's that show coming up? When's that show coming up?" So if Kirk Walker's listening to this, and I'm in the Patreon for Cheezo Media, and I see Kirk Walker, and I'm like, oh. You don't be bullying them, Kirk. You let they'll get their show on when they do. Now, don't hassle them. Oh man, I love Kirk Walker. He's very mysterious. I think he has like data from Star Trek as his thing. So it's like, is this even a person? Who is this? All right. Well, everything is like so on demandy now, and I'm letting you guys go in a second, so don't get too antsy. But everything is so on demandy now. But is there a time and a place where, well, obviously the place for Great Lakes lore is greatlakeslore.com and saucerlife.com for Saucer Life. But is there a schedule that people should, you know, when can they expect new shows? Or is this kind of as they flow out of Cheezo Media headquarters?
For Great Lakes Lore, we release new shows every other Monday. So this upcoming Monday is a release day. We're releasing our episode on the Wendigo. And that went up on actually the Patreon today because subscribers get that early. And so, we try to keep that going every other week. And then, actually, the Saucer Life is sort of alternate weeks, but, Aaron, I'll let you talk about when you release those.
We sort of have regular episodes every other Friday. So today we had a new episode come out about some of the UFO magazines that Alan Greenfield did back in the 1970s. And then on alternate weeks, we do sort of a listener feedback and sort of respond to listener comments and questions. Just a brief little thing. Sometimes really short, sometimes a little bit longer, depending on how people feedback. So generally Fridays, there is Saucer Life content. And on the Patreon, those come out on Wednesdays.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, well, I'll let you guys go here. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed the conversation. I'm a huge fan of the show. You know, I really love what you guys are doing. And it's what I remember when I had Aaron on when he first started Saucer Life, and I was, like, so jealous. And now, because he does such an amazing job, And now I'm like doubly jealous because now he's got two great shows and an awesome co-host and Great Lakes Lure is fantastic and you know, so I'm very impressed with the work you guys are doing. It's really awesome, entertaining and educational and enlightening. It's, you know, it's really good. It's like I said, I rarely listen to shows, but I listen to them sometimes. I'm like, oh, geez, these guys are really good. Damn it. Oh, this is really awesome stuff that I'm listening. I got to get my life together. So that's how good the show is, folks. That's the kind of it's a fantastic program. So go check it out, GreatLakesLore.com. And I really enjoyed talking to you guys tonight. And thank you for everything. And I'll be keeping tabs on what you're doing next.
All right. Well, thanks so much for having us. It was great talking to you.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Good night.
All right. Yeah. Talk to you later.
Yep.
Later.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, folks. There you go. That was Aaron and Sam from Great Lakes Lure. I wasn't trying to be hyperbolic there. I really do enjoy their show quite a bit. It's fantastic stuff. It's really well put together, and it's really, really good. So check it out, and check out the Patreon. It's only like $5, I think. So considering all these subscription services out there, it's a good deal. And you do get a lot of stuff on there. So with all that said, what do we got next week? So next week is the inadvertent Winter of Weirdness finale, I believe, because next week's the 18th, and the first day of spring is the 21st. So I don't know. That doesn't necessarily mean we're not going to do a show the week after that. It just means I fucked up the name of the of the season and didn't really plan it out very well. But I had all that chaos in January and February. So as I said before, the Winter of Weirdness is cursed as a concept, which would explain why we're pulling a Sully Sullenberger on the landing of the Winter of Weirdness with the inadvertent WOW finale next week with my friend. And I believe he goes by his government name. So he's AP Prodigious on Twitter. He's a good friend of mine, Matt Hopewell. He's been on a whole bunch of shows. If you're in the weird Twitterverse, you know Matt well, and he's pretty prolific on Facebook, too, I believe, but I'm, like, barely on Facebook, so I mostly see him on Twitter, and he lives around here, the New England area, and we've hung out a few times, and he's a big-time paranormalist. He's into all kinds of strange and unusual stuff. He has a fantastic appreciation for the history of the paranormal and the kind of in keeping. I think if there's a theme that's sort of emerging here, you know, over the course of this second half of the Winter of Weirdness, it would be sort of like that classic retro high strangeness, and that's right in Matt's wheelhouse as well. So we'll be exploring, you know, those kind of things. Yeah, so. I don't know what else to tell you. That's going to be next Friday night at 9 p.m. So that would be, what, March 18th at 9 p.m.? Same Banal time, same Banal channel. And then what happens after that, I don't know. I may get lazy and take a couple of weeks off while I try to figure out what we'll call the next incarnation of BOA. But there's still a whole bunch of people left for me to talk to that I haven't got around to talking to. So I don't expect that we're going to fold up the tent just yet for 22, yeah. Yeah, so on that note, big thanks to Zach Copley and Jim Latica for joining us in the chat room. Thanks to all the folks who tuned in live. And, of course, thanks to all the people who are listening on the MP3, you know, via the podcast feed. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Until next time, this is Tim et al. signing off.